and die. Because that's what professional sex is all about. We pay you this money, we give you a wondrous life, and all the things that you want are actually laid on, the best of food, the best of money, everything. And every now and again we've got to say, we've got this problem. Go away and die on our behalf, because that's what you signed up to do. And I think that we run an aristocracy in exactly the same way. Our society is a warrior aristocracy. And if you live in this part of the world, that is underlined all the time, because the village I live in is near.
Because they're easier to defend. But I wondered whether they were related to trade or for who were they defending themselves against. Well, or was it just a thing that they felt they needed to?
Well, I don't know. You see, the way I think about it, in this part of the world with hill forts and the Iron Man, the pond hill forts, you've got to have proto-urban organisation. In other words, we're looking at a society which is on the verge of nationhood. If you look in history, in Gaul with the Count of Caesar and all the rest of it, and Vercingetorix, the reason why the Celtic nations failed was that they weren't organized. They hadn't achieved this nation, which we saw in the rest of the civilizations in Greece. We find all that beginning to build up into a sense of nationhood based upon the city-state. Now, if we come back to the prehistory of this part of the world, in order for the agricultural system to be as successful as Caesar tells us it was, and our research underlines that it could have been, then you're looking at a process which says you must have an infrastructure which allows that to work. Hiya, Meg.
Hiya.
You've got to have the service industries. Now, the places for service industries are not on the land, because they're non-producers. They are producers in the sense they make objects and all the rest of the stuff, but you've got all the smiths and all the wrights. They're there. They've got to be there because we've got the archaeological evidence for them. Mm-hmm. But they're non-producers.
Mm.
Where do you put them? I mean, are they going to be in a hovel in the middle of nowhere, or are they going to be in places like David? If you've got a surplus production from all these little farms, you've got to concentrate this stuff before you move it. Where do you concentrate it? In the service zone. And what do you get at Danebury? You get vast numbers of storage units, whether they're pits or whether they're four-post structures. Right? The place is absolutely wham-jam full of these bloody things. There's one street that kind of suggests is lined with granary. You know, you could call it Eno Street or Granary Street or Red Road or whatever, you know. But the point is, it's there. Now, in order to make sense of the hill fort, I think we're looking at a proto-urban situation where the service industries are being concentrated in a location. See? Now then you come to make it, why so many ditches and banks? Why are they so impressive? Why did we make our towns impressive to this very day? We are better than you are. We people from Wellingborough look down upon you people from Luton because we've got a nicer town and we've got better walls and better ditches and banks. And really you're a bunch of peasants. People in Luton say, well, we've got to do something about this. And it's all about competition. Because there are only, what is it, come on, you know this, you've been a student subsequent to me, Breeden Hill in Worcestershire, the one that your man dug up down in Somerset. What's the name of the hill fort down there that he dug up?
Cadbury.
Right, South Cad. And one or two others that escape me for the present time that show evidence of Celt stopping Celt. Otherwise, Roman stopping Celts. You know, the old Vespasian and his 20 hill forts and a campaign. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the other evidence?
Yeah.
And you've got hill fort by hill fort, or hill and whatever it is.
That's right, they overlook each other, don't they?
Yeah, they overlook. What are they doing? They're saying, me, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
And that strikes me as being an overall. You can drive coaches and horses through a whole argument, I suspect, but it seems to me a better overall picture if you're going to make the hypothesis that it was a warrior aristocracy.
So if you assume...
No, no, just no, trying to see how... whether there are any aspects of what we know on the island that perhaps can fit there.
I was going to say, if you've got promontory forts and places like this, does that mean that at this site we are looking at primarily a farm, an agricultural...
Or are you looking at a kind of palace?
Well, this is the other side of things, really. Don't sort of think of promontory forts as being, you know, the perfect defensive site. I mean, this is in a wetland. I mean, use natural defences to best advantage. If that's a natural moat or a rocky rampart.
If you wandered through a wetland with a rifle over your back and a pack and a full set of kit, the last thing you want to be is up to your knees and run. You really don't get it. Not good.
You can't move
anywhere
in any direction.
It's nasty. And you're wet and cold and fundamentally miserable. And that is not a good way to fight anybody.
So I think all these discussions are going to be very pertinent to what the interior could look like. What impression we give to people, whether these are farmers just surviving or they're successful, is, you know.
But I think that our fundamental assumption is that these guys are successful.
Yeah.
Well, I think if we make any other assumption, then it's a nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, and you could almost raise that argument from the side of the planet. I know it's torturous, but you follow the logic.
Yeah.
You know, and if you were to turn around and say, well, we've got all these promontory hill forts and all the rest of it, this is fine. This is sort of pointing outwards and saying, we have tough guys here. And then you look on the interior and you've got these downgrade structures of Gossel, right? Then these must represent the palaces and the village scenario is that which was emerging out of people. Or the small farm unit, or the peasant house. And what you will have inside this, if you were going to put a theatre in there, now you've got your audience here, you've got your storyteller, you can indulge in smellies, if you must, you know, roast pork or roast whatever, over the fire, or boiled meat and all the rest of this stuff. And you've got exactly the scenario of the palace. And in the end, again, you're sorry to hark back to the classical world, but I think this is referring, written in the 8th century, referring to the 10th century BC. There's a discussion between two of the heroes outside the walls of Troy which runs more or less as follows. One says that Jesus has to be 10 years old. What the hell is going on? The Trojans are still in there, we're still out here, and at home, at the most gorgeous point, my children, my lands run with no control. Why are we here? The reason we're here is because of home. You've got a beautiful home, and your land is run with milk and honey. It's because the rest of the peasantry is actually working their socks off to give you all that stuff to go and fight their battle. Because the Trojan War is about to come. This is the war. And I think that when you look at the islands, we are looking at that kind of exercise, the sustaining your man. You know, in Irish you call him your man. He's the guy that we tug everything to. And if you think of the juxtaposition between the Irish evidence and the Isle of Man, you're beginning to look at it. I still think it's here in England. Abundance. Thank you. economically, it may absolutely be first class citizen. Because this country enjoys, despite the present risk, the best climate and the best variety of shade for the country of Syria for the whole of the Western Europe. If Caesar, talking 100 years prior to the invasion of Rome, says that we were exporting grains to Celts from the continent, this only serves to find the line that this place is really the breadbasket of Western Europe. Now, if we've got the initial empire needs to be moved, and it is the initial empire, then it's got to be a jolly good economic relationship with it. And what they wanted, in my opinion, is simply Southeast England, on the line from, if you want, Bristol, up to Yorkshire, and then to Devon. The rest of the place we don't want. We don't need. All we want is the rich zone. And which zone is the zone that contains the farinaceous diet on which the empire lives. The rest of them we can trade with to give the leather from them for the shields and shoes and money and all the rest of it for the back end or leave. And of course in terms of our production in this country, agricultural production, you can stay with that line, the Washington Street. You can stay with the crossway and say northwest of that line is livestock production. Southeast of that line is arable production. If you haven't got that far, then one is extremely important because it's the staple food supply. The other one is something we can trade with. We can live with buying. But the other stuff, the last thing we want to do is buy that. We need it. And you see, you can go to the 3rd century, or which century it is, the Roman army on the Rhine, the RAOR, runs out of food. Where do they go? They go to emergency supply, a ship from here, the Roman army on the Rhine. It's still highly productive, and yet once it's the profession of looking after a master slave symbol, then the production levels will naturally have gone down during the Roman Empire. In fact, there is evidence to suggest that livestock production became economically more viable than grain production because it cost less than human time. Because if you extend franchises and you turn people into Roman citizens, which they did, then you've got to kind of go and work with that. And you've got to put into that the whole principle of investment in the provinces in order to make the situation. In other words, they're doing exactly the same thing as you do on the procedures. Nothing changes. It's the same structure, it's the same investment system, and it's the same procedure process where you squeeze in the furthermost parts of your power structure in order to feed the same. When you're stuck in the middle of the South Downs, then you get channeled from a great height. You see, added to which you would be on Wales. If not the tail. But if you're standing down here and you look that way, what have you got? A bunch of Welsh idiots between you and your island. And consequently, this little enclave on the island of man thrives and thrives and thrives with its own traditions, its own myths and legends. As we know what we know.
If we can do it, then we don't need to worry about this.
My interviewer.
Oh, yeah. What happened?
The water pump failed.
Oh,
it's
new age.
Oh, yeah. It was horrendous.
Oh, it failed.
And then...
things about, that is the main.
I think the difference is really that somebody's just put the tools down and walked off site, and brand new in the sense that, I mean, on the interior though, if you, I mean, that's something we need to try and have on, is that once you've built one of these, from the experience, having built a number and done things inside them, is how quickly the timber ages and how it looks after a certain period. Paint
well smoked.
Yeah, that's a great. You know, how quickly do those things occur? Because we have got quite a time scale, if you like, from the point of this building having been built to the
how
point
gonna,
at which...
How are you going to light it?
That's, again, we have a sum of money to do it, set aside. We want it to be, if coping, the thought state of things, it will essentially be pretty dark. But, and everything will be lit from low level.
There is an ambient light that you get inside these things.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to look at and see what that... A lot of the thought that has been to date is that because we are... This is a theatrical reconstruction. It is not a genuine reconstruction. It is theatre.
Yeah.
So we would set it probably at night time, and that, maybe this idea of storytelling, that we would use that, but perhaps between two different generations, where we could get this idea of... Without lecturing the visitor, we can actually talk about the structure of the society without, again, being very specific.
Yeah.
It could be between, say, a young boy and an old man or whatever at night. It allows us to create... There's a lot of other... There's about 10 or 15 other areas, some of which are visually very dramatic, and we wanted this to be a very audio, you know, quite audio-based, but also to have this very accurate reconstruction as a setting for it. So it wants to look lived in, but there's nothing worse than building a new structure and then trying to make it look old, because it never looks old in a...
But
it never looks worn in a genuine way.
Yeah. I don't see the point in that, in a sense, because, again, if you use the stories from the Irish sagas and focused as your primary story, the champion's bush, which this lends itself to, then it's going to be a new house. Because your man actually built a new house, especially for the exercise. Now, the other point about that, if we're going to use timbers which you squared off, they are going to discolour naturally through time anyway.
Mm.
Because if we use green timbers, they're going to change the nature of their appearance year on year.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to end up like a piece of veal, which, unless you do something to it, I mean, these things have got juices in there, and those juices are actually going to change colour. And they'll change colour disproportionately. So there's that side to it. I would be inclined to go for it as a new structure which is going to age as the museum itself ages.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I would assume that if you built this structure, you would still bring with you a lot of material from your old house, which would be worn, cutty, and would have the signs of life that come with it. You wouldn't actually...
It's a presumption, you see, that you're actually building this from an old house. by the same token, I would suggest a house of that scale is going to have relatively few people inside it. Whereas a smaller house has got a greater probability of wall-to-wall people.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, reverse.
Which is the opposite of what the visitor will expect, which I quite like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I think they will build a big house because there's a lot of people.
Mm.
Mm. But you don't build big houses because there are a lot of people. You build big houses to tell the other people that you're rich.
Yeah, you've got lots of space. You can afford the space.
Wealth buys space.
Yeah.
Which is why I live in tiny houses.
Actually, going back to this question of lighting, I think we do need to look at, you know, realistically, what sort of apertures would we have? And if it is this massive turf cover thing,
I mean,
do they have windows?
There's an argument whether there's a hole in the roof or it just seeps up through.
That's
any
right.
Well, it's always a problem. I just genuinely don't know whether you have windows or not. If you have windows, then essentially there are two arguments. If it's a double ring structure, and we've got no problems if it's multiple ring, then you can afford to have windows. If it's a single ring structure, then you can't have a window because you're actually destroying the tensile strength of the wall.
Mm.
You know, that's a fundamental observation. But having said that, with this kind of structure, there's no reason why you shouldn't have windows.
You only need windows if you're doing things inside it that require...
Well, we require light, you
light.
See. And if you think in terms of a society which is illiterate, well, you don't even have to think in those terms. For crying out loud, when I was a child, very small child, you were nothing on as well. Do you remember candles?
I was brought up in a house in Dorset with no electricity and no water.
Right,
I went
my grandparents were exactly the same thing.
For university.
You know, and you went to bed with a candle.
Yeah.
That was normal.
You only worked within... I spent all my time before going to college working within that distance of a light if it was then that much.
Which is why you wear glasses. Why I wear contact lenses, because our eyes were screwed up at the age between 15 and 18. We spent far too much time in lousy life. Well, you guys have no problems.
That does actually lead on to other questions. I mean, we've been toying with this idea, not just here, but elsewhere, in the Longhouse, for instance, so, about what sort of activities can one expect to take place indoors.
Bearing in mind, is
did they weaving
down the rain outside
yeah,
quite a lot?
Did they do their weaving indoors or out of doors?
I think probably a vast amount of this goes on indoors simply because of the weather.
Yeah.
You know, one of the biggest problems we've got, and that pervades the whole of Iron Age studies, is the fact that about 20 years ago, an awful lot of archaeologists buggered off to Africa, spent a fortnight out there, and came back and rewrote the Iron Age, both in terms of kinship, and chieftainship, and organisation of social orders, and using the argument that they lived in roundhouses as the direct parallel. It makes so much better. Because in Africa, you live outside, but you sleep inside. You want it smoky because mosquitoes don't. And if you don't want to be bitten to death, the best place to sleep is in a smoky atmosphere. So you're just underneath the smoke line, and all the nasty flying bugs are above it. It is normal. I've done this in Africa myself, and it works. But outside is wonderful. The sun shines, and you can do anything you want to do. Including brew beer, you know. But come back to England, and apart from 1976 and 1995, you know, you're a bit pushed. You're continually being wetted on by God, which is why your production levels of cereals are so high. Because green England is a green and a pleasant land. The only reason it's green is because people want. So consequently, vast numbers of these activities are going to go on inside. And there are many things, especially things like curing skins, which are better done inside. You know, you would probably have a through draft. You would do a lot of curing of the skins in the doorways. Because you want a gentle through draft. And it takes the nip of it, but then again, I sort of
try to make a new kind of thing.
I was just thinking back to this loom thing, and then I was thinking about talking about the Iliad, and I was wondering if it would be appropriate if we have here a palace for the lady of the house, like Penelope, to go off in some good quality.
Have you ever watched an old lady knit?
No, it's all in the head. It's counting. You don't need to see what you're doing.
You don't see what you're doing.
Yeah.
And similarly, when you watch Turkish peasants weaving Turkish carpets, they do it in the virtue of dark.
Well,
only when the pattern is complicated do they ever need light. But then they count the older ones that have been making Turkish carpets of their design forever. They know. And the other thing is, every Turkish carpet has got a mistake or two. Because if not, you change the one. You create a perfect Turkish carpet and it will be hated by everybody. But it has a little time to stay in place.
Yes.
Then that's perfectly adequate.
I'm doing some work in the Middle East at the moment. We've had some ceramic tiles made.
Yeah.
And one has been made with the bolting.
That's right.
Automatically. Don't even have to ask the
yeah.
The
you don't have
company
to ask
to
why.
It.
I don't think it would be an offence, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Right. Too close to perfect.
So, you know, there's no reason why, you know, sitting beside the fire, you shouldn't have a loom or whatever.
Mm.
Mm. In fact, this has got to be the focal point. Besides, we get your seats are there, so
that's
where it's
going. Yeah. There's a danger in this. Either it looks too empty and it doesn't interest the visitor enough, or there's a tendency to pack it with so much stuff that it doesn't work for that reason. And it's finding that balance between the two to make it work.
But I would suggest that that stage is so easy to play about with. The fundamental element is only the fire, the hearth.
Mm.
After that, you can bugger about to your heart's content by bringing in, taking out.
You can bring the props in and take them out.
You know, and you can do it on visitor satisfaction levels, if you like.
Mm.
I mean, that's just the dressing on top, and it means nothing.
I think I've seen.
Or it means everything.
Yeah, this has two functions. One, which is when it's a sort of busy today, it's part of the main visitor route, and it functions as one of the elements. But it also has an educational stage, which is where you might bring more props out, you know, and actually use it for demonstration and things.
But how long is the estimated visitor pause in this?
5 minutes.
So in other
words, the. I don't know if you forwarded such a drawing to the whole building. I'll send you a set. This is a huge undertaking. I mean, it goes from the Celts to the 20th century, essentially, and it's about the island's history from its Celtic tradition to its current maritime tradition and Peel Castle. This is one of 20 spaces this big being undertaken.
Yeah.
There's a Viking longship being
retowered
as if it's just being beached.
Yeah,
landing and things. This is very important, but it's one of a step, and we can't. I think within
can't
the sort
have
of the media visitor, there's two other elements before this, which are, if you like, part of the Celtic tradition. One, which the first one is just a quick bit of AV glitz, really, just to say the Celts thought of themselves and were very important, you know, and were not what everybody looks back on them or the general public. The second one is that model area, which is just an area really to get people orientated and settled down. Then there's this. They then go to this into a small gallery which deals with Celtic religion and balancing it against becoming Christianity, because that's so important to the Isle of Man and Christian churches. Then we get to the Vikings. Then there's a reconstruction of a Viking longhouse. Then there's a major audiovisual theatre which is talking about the Celtic the Viking Christian stones on the off man. Then we've got the long ship. Then they go upstairs. And then they start the 20th, then they start with the fishing and maritime tradition.
Yeah. So really the impact that this has got to have on them is pure scale.
One of the things we've
got to go into this.
One of the kids, we never caught one of these. You know, the one reason for us putting the model is because people look at models and think, God, that's only small, it's just a little thing. Anybody can build one of these. And one of these has got to be that you walk and you go in, and to look from one side to the other, which is the longest view we can get, because people are going to go, how the hell does this stand up? You know,
so
the
first thing I would chop is the model. What I would use is either a mural or even versus ground plane. I would not use a model because you would actually screw with the psychology of the visitors. What you want, the impact that you need to get is the one which says, Jesus Christ, this is bloody enormous. If you produce a model and you kill that instantly,
you kill the scale.
You know, you put in people's minds, oh, it's art.
It's a toy.
Yeah.
It's enough. You can buy one.
Yeah, you can buy one, eh? And I think that would be a fundamental presentational error. Psychologically, I don't know. I mean, you guys are the experts at this, right? I'm just a mere amateur.
I've also got an Ironage farm, but a visitor attraction, that's got to, you know, something.
I think it depends to some extent. I agree with it's how we present that model and what its function is.
Quite frankly, I would chuck it. It's three-dimensional. It's three-dimensional by definition.
Bed.
Yeah. Hey.
I mean, not saying no. We were going to have sort of murals anyway representing.
But you see, if you got that, for the sake of argument, and pump it up, jump, as big as it will stand, or as big an area as you've got, and nothing else, jump, and then they go from that into this, and you would kill instantly the scale problem, because it worried the hell out of me that this whole principle of models, because they actually tell people an untruth.
Well, people, I think, give them look at models, or anyway, look at models, they like the models.
They don't actually
get you beyond the fact that they like the model.
Why use one?
Well, unless you've got no other, unless you're using it purely as a 3D diagram.
But a 3D diagram is telling the wrong story. No matter how beautifully it's done, it's still telling a fundamental concept which doesn't transfer.
That's partially.
It does to you and I, because we're trained to think in a scale. You know, it's this big and it says it's at 1 to 10, boom! I understand that, you understand that, but does Joe Bloggs down the street understand that?
That's my part, can't read plans.
Well, you see, now you go down another route. There was a lovely thing on television in the Midlands yesterday, and they're naming streets, like David Copperfield Avenue, and all the rest of it. And they went around the local public, because somebody has complained they're going to call it Enid Blyton Corner. And so they went round and they asked the locals in this particular target, do you know who Charles Dickens was? Never heard of him. You know, and they went down this route and they asked all these classic authors that nobody ever bloody reads, have you heard of Enid Blyton? Oh yes! I remember Enid Blyton.
I think the fun of my job being sort of museum design is that we force all these poor people who are like Andrew to have to make reality out of things, which doesn't happen. And at the end of the day, accuracy is very important, but the great thing is making the public enthusiastic about the subject and wanting them to, if they see this one and then they see your sign, they want to go to that one, or they go to that one and they want to go to this one. You're never going to tell them the complete story or get it 100% right. One of the best bits of my job is going through archaeologists' scripts and taking all the perhapses, maybes and could-bes out to make it totally false and comprehensible to the public. I mean, because otherwise you get, you know, I had a great one which was, it's an important causewayed camp. I said, well, the public don't understand what a causewayed camp is and
important value judgment.
So why are we putting this site on display? Well, it's an important archaeological dig, but why is that important to the public? This was about a 4-month discussion to actually say, I want to know how I'm going to get the public interested in a causewayed camp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's very difficult.
This is a ritual site.
For what?
Why?
We don't know. But if you come from the other end and say, we don't know what it's for, but it must have been important, because if we calculate the amount of soil that was moved, it must have taken a lot of people a lot of effort. At least you've got a clue.
Yeah.
You know, you've got something that people can get a handle on, but if it's just an important causeway of camp, it means bugger all.
Yeah.
Why did you people dig this?
Well, this is exactly the argument I was using against the model.
Yeah.
Exactly the same argument, but in different clues.
I think there is a danger to believe that, I mean, if you make put a model in the gallery or whatever, that the public think that that's what these people did first, and sort of almost like an architectural model. Although, I mean, that's an argument
I'd like the pipes on the outside.
But I had that argument with Verulamium, though, once, that to some degree, as a culture, you do get delivered what your culture delivers to you. But I still believe the Romans had a sense of going to habitat, in one way or another. But their houses weren't just like that because they were. You're a Roman, you had that mosaic. He wanted one because Mrs. So-and-so
has got one up the road.
Or whatever.
That's
or was a damn good salesman with a good book or whatever.
Yeah. The mosaics we know came in wallpaper books.
I haven't seen a museum anywhere that treats the selection of Roman decoration as something that you would do for yourself. That you are there, you're having a new house built, and you've got to make your own decisions.
Yeah.
Why isn't this treat, you know, you're saying that things repeat themselves, why can't we do it that way, which is make it human?
Just so happens we're building it on the
other side. Right. I mean, I think that's a system. Somebody's making decisions, I'm going to have a room there.
Yeah.
Yes, you're slightly copying, because we all do it. Nobody reinvents their own interior design, but great fun to actually have this idea, this couple standing there, and the salesman saying, well, which one do you want? And an argument going on.
What, with gold
caps? And we can't afford that, we're going down to B&Q. And you always got this different level, and actually what you can afford.
Yeah.
And it's not decisions are really no different.
Yeah. No, that's right enough.
But you wonder with this. I mean, I often just sit there and wonder, but whether the technology in the society is not flexible enough to allow people to make choices.
I genuinely don't know.
Is the pattern of these structures so so repetitive that it almost is that if you have a house, you have one of these?
I genuinely don't know. You see, these are atypical for a start, and that's where we're becoming easy.
Yeah.
But when you come to the other round of houses, they're now beginning to excavate in a more meticulous manner than ever before, and you get the interiors are actually distinguished one half from the other half. In one half you find lots and lots of artifacts, in the other half you find virtually none. So in other words, you're actually looking at activity zones within the structure.
Mm.
Now that in itself is fascinating, because up until recently a roundhouse is a roundhouse. Well, what do you do where?
Mm.
And now they're beginning to actually extract from this stuff working zones within the house, and they seem to be typical with a very small sample.
Mm.
They seem to be typically divided into two halves, so that the southeast half has got lots of artifacts in, and the northwest half doesn't. But the southeast half is where you've got the doorway, which is a logical exercise when you come to think about it. That's where most light is.
Mm. Which would mean that if we're taking the idea that
Where's the entrance?
If we're saying that this
yours is on the southwest,
which is where the prevailing wind comes from.
Jeez, so you've got a window in every jacket all the time.
Mm.
Or have you? Have you got
look, this pink that things? You're rubbing, mm-hmm. I hope you're going to expurgate. Hey, Hazel? Promise?
But yep.
But that's the sort of thing, I mean, you're talking about the windows in a single ring brown house, and whether or not you can actually have them and so on. The same sort of question arises here, that once you get into multiple rings and so on, and possibly partitioning and so on, you may be able to create some sort of battle or whatever.
Oh yeah. Mm. Yes, that's right enough. Oh yeah, once you've got an upstanding structure in the ring.
But we were, as you started talking about partition size out of the room, I was just wondering...
You're leaving that one here, isn't
it? Oh, great. But you know, this whole idea of activity areas and perhaps specialist areas, or maybe there is stabling here and sort of partitioned off in some sort of way. I mean, do you think that A, that that's tenable, and B,
I think it's unlikely, and the reason I think it's unlikely is the same argument that you use for lack of any other kind of evidence from the UK for stable animals in science, insofar as the weather is never bad enough. The only reason for keeping livestock inside a building is because you've got 2 meters of snow.
Mm.
You know, look, as in
Iceland and Greenland.
But you don't need, in northern France, you see, in the countryside, you can get often 1 meter, 2 meters of snow, and that's enough to get rid of all the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And your cattle, similarly, are not going to survive, so you bring them in. Now, on the Isle of Man, as in central southern England, you've not got this problem. So why create an answer to it?
Mm-hmm.
We've also got another problem, insofar as roundhouses exist only in the United Kingdom, the Isle of Man, Ireland, and in northwest Spain. The rest of the building tradition is a rectilinear one. You know, it's an oddball exercise.
There's nowhere further east than a circular tradition.
The circular tradition actually doesn't exist in the Mycenaean world, but the Tholos tombs, they're round. You'll find the Galadian tombs on the Mindus Peninsula in Turkey, they're round. You'll find various shepherd's huts subsequent to that time being built in circular form.
But they're unusual.
They might be common in an area, but they're not writ large across the landscape. And if you look at the evidence for Greek houses, Hellenistic houses, they're mud built and they're rectangular. Two room jobs.
Mm.
Often plastered and at the end of the day probably quite habitable. But they're small and they are in fact rectangular. So this insular, in inverted commas, tradition of building roundhouses is key. And if you look at the Spanish stuff in Galicia, they're all small. And in Lusitania, vast numbers of them. There's one wondrous site at Monte Santa Tecla, which overlooks the Minho between Spain and Portugal, the River Minho. And there, you've got... Hi, Brian. You've got all sorts of little tiny houses forming streets and complexes all over the place inside a defended enclosure like a football.
Mm.
Stuff all over the moment. It's all interesting stuff, but you know, the roundhouse question is not continental.
Mm.
So you were saying that this is one open structure with very little division in it.
I didn't actually say that, but I think so. But you see, the problem comes in the excavation itself.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that is odd to me is this differentiation on the rings between what's on the floor. That's me just looking at it. A non-archaeologist looking at it, banging buttons. That's very odd.
And you could argue.
That was stopping you kicking between the two.
Yeah.
Intentionally. Just literally. Didn't it need to have something to stop it?
Yeah, otherwise it should all be flat.
Yeah.
But how accurate is that? You know, is it real or is it perceived? Because on the other side, you've actually got the opposite.
It's
very odd. You see, down here.
Is it to do with erosion?
Down there, you've got this
kind
of spread, which is only in there. I mean, is this some kind of, I mean, I would almost cut down the roof if we're actually looking at an enclosure with a palisade fence around it and a double ring house inside it, lopsided though it might be. But bearing in mind it's got a clap roof, it doesn't matter. Because the angle of the roof is not that critical. Mm. But that would be a reinterpretation of what Ursula suggested. And that's not the game we're trying to play at the minute. We're actually assuming that Ursula is correct. And therefore, we're going to build a structure which is perceivably that big, i.e. 7 foot apart. Mm. And what we're trying to do is create a situation where the visitor is impacted by that diameter.
So, yeah, I wasn't to be surprised that people could build at that time. I bet you didn't believe they could build something that big out of the other material.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. It's exactly the syndrome of being more complex than the Greek temple. That takes a gigantic step for our culture, but it's still based upon the classical world.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a river, good Lord, apart from the
world, it is another wonderful building, but it is essentially a very simple architectural deal.
What kids do with bricks is the signature.
Well, do you remember when we were kids, we were given the building blocks which made into a Greek temple. I've been trying now for ages in the second-hand shop to find
one of those.
Because they came in wooden boxes, you remember, and like pillars of Doric columns and everything. And capitals and pediments and...
You still get that sort of shape in modern early Roman boxes.
Yeah. It's all back in the classical world. You know, I'd love to get hold of all those buildings there. But I've never seen anybody provide